Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. I thought I'd start out with a few comments. Good morning, JBL. I just finished listening to your 60-plus panel, and I wanted to tell you I disagree with the negative feedback. I feel that the show is fantastic. The student panel was very helpful to me, and I love the idea of you doing a 60-plus panel. With each new person that is talking about this story, new aspects are brought out. In one of the shows, you said that Hemingway showed that a man's man can also be a writer. I had never thought about boys thinking that man's man could not be writers. Thank you for bringing this point out. The students did not seem to talk as freely as you and your wife, but that can be understood seeing their young age. Thank you for all your hard work and putting this together. Here's another one that I thought was very special, and also wanted to say thank you to them if they're listening in today. Hi, JBL. I enjoyed listening to your programs about Ernest Hemingway. A year ago, I had a couple of hours to myself in the Petoskey area and tracked down the Hemingway summer home on Walloon Lake. It is still owned by his nephew. It is a very beautiful setting with a little point of land jutting out and a pretty cedar tree by the shore. The house is set at a little angle to take in the view of the lake. I also found the Horton store and thought you would enjoy seeing the place where he visited. In the town of Petoskey, I stopped at a nice little pub, and they had a big sign behind the way telling about Hemingway coming there and writing. He sat in the second stool from the corner of the bar near where people come and go, and he had some kind of a drink. I think it was a beer and a shot or something. So I sat in his chair and had his drink and just pondered it all. I enjoy your show and the personal feel of it. I also enjoy your guest. I hope things keep going well for you. So that was, a very nice comment. Another comment I received was by telephone. It was one from one of our blind listeners, and she has some very good things to say about Old Man and the Sea. And in fact, she says that because she became blind later in life, that she actually, when she hears the novel read by her electronic device, she actually still sees the words, and the words really help bring up pictures in her mind. And so I thought that was very exciting to hear that, and I'm glad she is really taking the program in. But several other listeners have asked me why the novel has no chapters. Now, I think that's a very good question. I think it's a very interesting question. Hemingway truly was a master at his craft. Now, we have to accept that having no chapters was really a part of his planning when he wrote the book. Now, why do you think he did that? Well, because there are no chapters, Hemingway made it difficult for his readers to put the book down. And many people have wrote me and said that, look, I just couldn't put the book down. I just had to keep reading. So why did Hemingway do this to us? Well, I do have a quote from him, and he was interviewed by George Plimpton, and many of you football fanatics or addicts or football maybe aficionados, I'll say it that way. You might deduce that I'm not one of those. But anyway, George Plimpton did have an interview with Hemingway right after he wrote the book. And here's what he told Plimpton. And I think this gives us insight into why there are no chapters in the book. He said, "The Old Man and the Sea could have been over 1,000 pages long and had every character in the village in it, and all the processes of the way they make their living were born, educated, bore children, etc., etc. This is done excellently and well by other writers. In writing, you are limited by what has already been done satisfactorily. So I have tried to learn to do something else. First, I have tried to eliminate everything unnecessary to conveying experience to the reader so that after he or she has read something, it will become a part of his or her experience and seem actually to have happened. This is very hard to do, and I've worked at it very hard. And so Hemingway saw that chapters would be unnecessary, and it would actually take away from your experience of the story. Now, I have to tell you that his method worked for me. I know when I read the book, I feel like I'm right there in the skiff with Santiago. I believe I see what he sees, and I experience what he experiences. I feel his agony. I feel his frustration. And I also feel his resolve to get that marlin to the shore. I know many of you listening have told me the same things. So you know, Hemingway was really a master about his craft of writing, and he really did work very hard at it. He also wrote this to Charles Scribner on October 1st, 1951. This is a letter that he wrote to his editor and publisher. And, of course, he is talking about The Old Man and the Sea. He said, "This is the prose that I have been working for all my life that should read easily and simply and should seem short and yet have all the dimensions of the visible world and the world of man's spirit. It is as good prose as I can write as of now." And so it is kind of interesting. This listener who is blind, and when she called me about the book, she said she loved the book. And she loved it a lot. But when I told her that we had just finished taping the last panel on the book, and that program aired on April 18th, she asked me, she says, "Would you do just one more program?" And she says, "Just tell us some of your additional thoughts on Santiago." So what I want to do today is, as I do want to talk about the character Santiago, and I want to use this last quote from Hemingway's letter to Charles Scribner as maybe a way that we can fine-tune our thinking or fine-tune our thoughts on the book. All the critics agree that Santiago is essentially Hemingway. And, some feel he was very wrong in doing it. Other ones, accept it. But I believe in the character Santiago, Hemingway uses that character as a means to reveal his personal philosophy of life. Now, to be honest, 99% of the people in this world have the same philosophy. And of course, there is a reason for that. Now, let me just go back over this quote again that he wrote to Scribner. Here is the Scribner quote again. "This is the prose that I've been working for all my life that should read easily and simply and should seem short and yet have all the dimensions of the visible world and the world of man's spirit. It is as good prose as I can write as of now." Now, to all the listeners out there, if you really thoroughly read this book, I mean, really spend some time with it and study it. I know someone just told me recently that they really have not been a reader all their life, and they actually would want to start reading, but they want to know why I picked such a boring book to start out. And so I tried to carefully and say, well, no, just keep reading it. It'll get more interesting. But if you do a thorough read of the book, you will see that Hemingway does beautifully describe the dimensions of the visible world. But he also does describe, through Santiago, the world of a man's spirit. And, of course, you have to really get into some of the discussions that Santiago has in order to do that. Now, in the very first scene of the book, we learn that Santiago is very old. We have a description of his face, even the benign cancers on his face. But we also learn that he's very youthful in his thinking, because his eyes are as sparkling and beautiful as the sea. So we also learned that Santiago is not a cautious fisherman. He does not stay with all the other fishermen. Because of that, for the last 84 days, he hasn't caught any fish. He's kind of an adventurer. He takes great risks and, And that's why the boy's parents don't want him with Santiago. But yet Santiago does rely on his superior knowledge of the natural world, the sea, and fishing. Now, I do want to read some quotes from the book. And I'm using the Scribner 2003 edition if you want to follow along. And I'm going to start on page 28. And I want to read these because here is Hemingway describing the natural world, but it's a natural world that he knew really well. He was a fisherman. Of course, he loved hunting, and he loved killing big game. He loved catching big fish. I mean, he was not, maybe as excited as catching your river trout, but I know he did that as well. But here's the scene where Santiago is now going out onto the ocean or onto the sea without the boy, and he's really all alone. And I'm just going to break into the middle of the page there. It says, sometimes someone would speak in a boat, but most of the boats were silent except for the dip of the oars. They spread apart after they were out of the mouth of the harbor, and each one headed for the part of the ocean where he hoped to find fish. The old man knew he was going far out, and he left the smell of the land behind and rowed out into the clean early morning smell of the ocean. And so there's a description of the natural world. There is a certain smell to the land. Now, maybe we don't notice it. And there's also a very clean smell when you're on the ocean. And I know I've had the opportunity to go deep sea fishing. And there are different smells. And so obviously Hemingway paid attention to that clearly in his life. And so the old man in the book knows how to pay attention. Now, this quote goes on. He says, he saw the phosphorescence of the gulf weed in the water as he rowed over the part of the ocean that the fishermen called the Great Well, because there was a sudden deep of 700 fathoms where all sorts of fish congregated because of the swirl the current made against the steep walls of the floor of the ocean. Here there were concentrations of shrimp and baitfish, and sometimes schools of squid in the deepest holes, and these rose close to the surface at night where all the wandering fish fed on them. And so there is the natural visible world. And notice that Santiago knows how to use it. And he relies on this knowledge. He knows where the fish are. He knows where the deep holes are. And if we're not experienced around the ocean, we don't even notice those things. But he did have this incredible knowledge of this, this natural world. Now, I just wanted to go on this a little bit more and just show you that Santiago has this incredible knowledge of more than just the ocean. He has knowledge of the sky, and he has knowledge of the land. And notice what Hemingway writes here. It says, in the dark, the old man could feel the morning coming, and as he rowed, he heard the trembling sound as flying fish left the water and the hissing that their stiff set wings made as they soared away in the darkness. He was very fond of flying fish, as they were his principal friends on the ocean. He was sorry for the birds, especially the small, delicate, dark terns that were always flying and looking and almost never finding. And he thought, the birds have a harder life than we do, except for the robber birds and the heavy, strong ones. Why did they make birds so delicate and fine as those sea swallows when the ocean can be so cruel? Now, notice that paragraph. I mean, Hemingway, or I should really say Santiago, and it really does get confusing who's who here. But notice it says that Santiago is very fond of flying fish. And, of course, he knows the sounds they make when they're on the water. But notice it says he's sorry for the birds because, the birds are hungry and they're trying to find things in the ocean. And he asked that question, why did they make birds so delicate and fine as those sea swallows when the ocean can be so cruel? So, he knows they're created creatures, but he asks the question, why did they? And so obviously we can see that Hemingway obviously just saw the natural world as the natural world. In other words, he understands the visible world, but he doesn't even consider maybe the fact that there could be an invisible world. Now I want to just cover a little bit about what he says about the sea. And again, this is very, very beautiful writing, very descriptive writing. Even though it may be short, it really is like poetry in many ways. It says, and he's talking about the sea now, and he says, "She is kind and very beautiful, but she can be so cruel, and it comes so suddenly, and such birds that fly, dipping and hunting with their small, sad voices, are made too delicate for the sea." Hemingway goes on. He always thought of the sea as La Mar, which is what people call her in Spanish when they love her. Sometimes those who love her say bad things of her, but they are always said as though she were a woman. Some of the younger fishermen, those who used boys as floats for their lines and had motorboats, bought when the shark livers had brought much money, spoke of her as Elmar, which is masculine. They spoke of her as a contestant or a place or even as an enemy. But the old man always thought of her as feminine and as something that gave or withheld great favors. And if she did wild or wicked things, it was because she could not help them. The moon affects her as it does a woman, he thought. So there again is, again, Hemingway is really working hard to give a just a beautiful description of the sea and what he looked or how he looked upon the sea. And he saw her like a woman, and she had this these many benefits to give to people. So, you know, it really is kind of interesting when you look at the old man and you look at his knowledge. I think we can see that Hemingway maybe didn't phrase it quite this way, but he certainly does believe that man was created to subdue and rule over creation, and most specifically the animal world. And we know for a fact that Hemingway did look at the ocean as the last wild country that a man could conquer. So Hemingway was definitely a big believer in physical law, and physical law is simply a law of nature. And as a hunter and a fisher, he observed and he obeyed those physical laws. Now, it's also interesting, I think, as we go into the book, is what Hemingway believed about the relationship between man and beasts. He certainly believed that both man and beast were governed by the same laws, that there was this law of nature that governed both. But very often in the book, he refers to the beast or even the fish or the birds, he refers to them as his friends and his brothers. I'm going to turn over to page 54 now. And again, you can follow along with me if you you have the book there in front of you. But it is kind of interesting. I think this is some really touching scenes, and I know that that I really love to be in nature and observe nature, and I know I love to have the little birds in our neighborhood come in the yard. I do feed them and attract them, and I just enjoy, in mornings when I have the time to just sit there and watch them. But here's what Hemingway writes at the bottom of page 54. He says, "A small bird came toward the skiff from the north. He was a warbler and flying very low over the water. The old man could see that he was very tired. The bird made the stern of the boat and rested there. Then he flew around the old man's head and rested on the line where he was more comfortable. 'How old are you?' the old man asked the bird. 'Is this your first trip?' The bird looked at him when he spoke. He was too tired even to examine the line, and he teetered on it as his delicate feet gripped it fast. 'It's steady,' the old man told him. 'It's too steady. You shouldn't be that tired after a windless night. What are birds coming to?' 'The hawks,' he thought, 'that come out to sea to meet them.' But he said nothing of this to the bird, who could not understand him anyway, who would learn about the hawk soon enough. 'Take a good rest, small bird,' he said. 'Then go in and take your chance like any man or bird or fish.'" And so that is kind of interesting. And what Hemingway really did believe in, he believed in like a kill or be killed philosophy. And here he's talking about this sweet little warbler. And You know, the bird has to face the hawks. And that's the way Hemingway lived his life. He said, look, you know, we all have to face these struggles in life. And he said, look, take a good rest, small bird, and then go in and take your chance like any man or bird or fish. So he did live by this kill or be killed philosophy. And it is kind of a tough philosophy, but you know, there are people that believe this. And here's another quote. This is from page 59. He said, he's talking about the marlin now. He says, I wish I could feed the fish, he thought. He is my brother, but I must kill him and keep strong to do it. Slowly and conscientiously, he ate all of the wedge-shaped strips of fish. And so he was actually, you know, eating fish, and he was thinking he wished he could feed the marlin, but he's talking in the back of his mind that he's actually going to kill him. He's going to kill the marlin. Okay, let's skip ahead now just to page 74, and I want to read you some other things like on this kill and or be killed philosophy. This is as he's out on the water, and he has the marlin already trapped. And he says, this is the bottom of page 74, it said, it was dark. Now as it becomes dark quickly after the sun sets in September, he lay against the worn wood of the bow, and he rested all that he could. The first stars were out. He did not know the name of Rigel, but he saw it and knew soon that they would all be out, and he would have all his distant friends. So the old man saw even the stars of his friends. Then he goes on, the fish is my friend too, he said aloud. I have never seen or have heard of such a fish, but I must kill him. I am glad we do not have to try to kill the stars. Imagine if each day a man must try to kill the moon, he thought. The moon runs away, but imagine if a man each day would have to try and kill the sun. We were born lucky, he thought. Then he was sorry for the great fish that had nothing to eat, and his determination to kill him never relaxed in his sorrow for him. How many people will be fed, he thought, but are they worthy to eat him? No, of course not. There is no one worthy of eating him from the manner of his behavior and his great dignity. Now, listen to how he sums this up. He says, I do not understand these things, he thought, but it is good that we do not have to try and kill the sun or the moon or the stars. And so there, I think Hemingway is not only speaking for Santiago, he's speaking for himself, and that even though he had all of this knowledge about the natural world or the visible world, and even though he had all this knowledge about beasts and man, he admits that he just doesn't understand these things. And how many people in this world also are out there living their lives, and they're kind of out there working in a natural world or a visible world, and it's how many people feel they're in like a kill or be killed situation? Well, I worked out in the corporate world for years, and I know it's like that in today's society. But Hemingway is not embarrassed to tell us in the book either that he was really confused about spiritual matters. So he could really understand the physical world. He could really understand physical law. But he definitely was very confused about religion and spiritual matters. And that's where 99% of the people in the world need to come to that same conclusion, that, well, we just don't wonder enough about spiritual matters, or we just don't think about spiritual matters. Here's what the old man says. This is the bottom of page 64. He says, I'm not religious, he said, but I will say 10 Our Fathers and 10 Hail Marys that I should catch this fish, and I promise to make a pilgrimage to the Virgin of Cobre, if I can catch him. That is a promise. So of course, we do know that Hemingway at one point in his life did try and embrace Catholicism, but even that didn't work out for him. And he goes on then to write, he says, he commenced to say his prayers mechanically. Sometimes he would be so tired that he could not remember the prayer, and then would say them so fast that they would come automatically. And so, you know, he really did not have this real deep understanding of religion. And towards the bottom of the page, this is page 65, he says, with his prayers said and feeling much better, but suffering exactly as much, and perhaps a little more, he leaned against the wood of the bough and began mechanically to work the fingers of his left hand. So even though Hemingway prays and he feels, or I should say as Santiago prays, and that's why it's really hard to get the two to straight out because they're actually the same person, but he really is confused about religion. And I want to read you, this is from page 87 quickly, and it is quite interesting here. He talks about religion again, and it is typical of what so many people do in this world. So he's out there and he's really trying to get the fish in. He knows he's going to have trouble. He's hungry. He's tired. He hasn't been sleeping. He's got black spots in front of his eyes. He's probably at his worst point in this whole test to bring this fish in. And he goes on and he writes, this is Santiago saying, "I could not fail myself and die on a fish like this," he said. "Now that I have him coming so beautifully, God help me endure. I'll say 100 Our Fathers and 100 Hail Marys, but I cannot say them now." And so how many people, when they get into to deep trouble, that's when they seek God, or that's when they say, "Look, I really need help, but I can't even pray now. Just help me, and I promise I'll do it later." And of course, by the end of the book, we don't hear any more references to him praying later. So I do think it's interesting that here in this book, and Hemingway does a beautiful job of describing this incredible visible world, and it is the descriptions are beautiful, and he also has this way of showing how much perseverance that Santiago has, and Santiago has this incredible resolve, and he does have this incredible spark and this incredible intelligence. But he doesn't have any understanding of the spiritual side of things. And, that's the way it is for most people in the world. But we do know that there was a great writer in first century Christianity. His name was Paul. And, he knows a lot about the spirit world, and he also knows about man's spirit, or as our namesake, Herbert W. Armstrong, the namesake of our college, said, about the human spirit. And Paul wrote about the human spirit, and he wrote about how man should be using that human spirit and how it needs to connect with God's Holy Spirit. And, he did write that in his first letter to the Corinthians. Now, Ernest Hemingway didn't understand God's true purpose for man. He lived a full natural life, and he did die miserably. We know that at the end of his life, he was very upset that he had four wives. He had a slew of mistresses. He had trouble with his children. So, but it looks like he did believe that really humans are really not much different than animals. But actually, we know differently, that humans are not animals, and we're very different. So the namesake of our college has written an incredible book, and it is titled The Incredible Human Potential. And it does explain in detail about the human spirit. It does explain in detail the purpose for human beings. And you can have that book sent to you for free. And just by the asking, you can go on to thetrumpet.com and you can request it there. Or you can call the number 1-800-772-8577. And they will send you the book. There'll be no follow-up. There's no charge. It's free to you. And I'd like you to remember, as we close today, that if you have any more questions or comments for me, you can email me at jbl@pcog.org. You can also follow JBL on Twitter. That address is at jbliterature1. Now, on our next program, I will begin the discussion of the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin. And again, if you want to purchase your own copy, the Dover Thrift Edition is available on Amazon.com for about $5. And so thanks for joining me today. And until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.